As they say in Swahili, Bwana Asifiwe, praise the Lord. And as you know, in September of 2019, Diana and I, along with my daughter-in-law, Angie, and her son, Corey, experienced a heartwarming mission trip to Kenya. One evening in the village, Corey spotted this big, unusual bug sitting atop one of the bushes. It had dragonfly-like wings, a hornet-type body, complete with a stinger-like tail. It was dark, and it was speckled with some bright colors. He took a close-up picture of it with his phone and then Googled it. And instantly, he had a description, exact location, and other specifics of this tropical insect. Just fascinating. I don't know if you've ever wondered about the butterfly effect. It's a theory advanced by biologist Dr. Farman Street, and in essence, he says that the butterfly effect traces the existence of a hurricane in Florida to a busy insect in West Africa. It goes something like this. A butterfly flaps its wings at just the right time and stirs the smallest of air gusts. The burst of air grows and grows, rippling around the globe until it results in a chaotic storm. Well, I'm on board with the butterfly part, at least to the effect that small things can lead to big events. No one who has planted a seed will ever wonder or dispute the power of modest beginnings. It's not the result I question, it's the randomness. I mean, who finds consolation in a philosophy of happenstance or accidents? I don't. But I do find great promise in comfort in verses like this, as even in our scripture reading, our God is in the heavens and he does as he wishes. From eternity to eternity, I am God. No one can oppose what I do, Isaiah 43:13. We were chosen from the beginning to be gods, and all things happen just as he decided long ago, Ephesians 1:11. One prophet asked, who can command things to happen without the Lord's permission? Lamentations 3:37. Another declared, no one can interrupt his work. No one can call his rule into question. Daniel 4:35. He declared in Isaiah 46:10, I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. I say my purpose will stand, and I will do all that I please. The butterfly may stir, but only with the permission of God can a wing flap create a hurricane. He is the blessed controller of all things, 1 Timothy 6:15. And he certainly was in the story of Esther. You might want to buckle your seatbelts because the next few scenes unfold at high speed. Beth Moore. Esther was now in the driver's seat. She took responsibility, but she also took the reins. And after three days of spiritual and mental preparations, she got prepared physically. Make no mistake about it, Esther's full intent was to dress for success. The royal robes was a power suit if there ever was one. Clearly, she appeared before the Xerxes as none other as than the queen of the vast Persian Empire. And chapter 5 opens with Esther standing in the inner court, just close enough for the king to catch a glimpse of his queen and a whiff of her perfume. Verse 2. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of his scepter. Max writes, pleased with her? How about unraveled by her, overwhelmed by her, reduced to ice cream on a July sidewalk by the sight of her? He was a middle schooler and she was a college-age cheerleader. I get that. But it wasn't her glamour that opened the throne room door. It was her prayers. She came before the king in beauty only after she had lingered before the King of Kings in humility. And are we called to do the same? Don't think for a moment that you have what it takes to weather winters. Yet don't think for a second that God won't give you what you need. Max shares that many years ago, when his family lived in Brazil, a new Christian came to one of his church leaders with a question, and he'd been reading the Bible, which was very good for him, and he discovered this promise found in Matthew 21:22. Whatever things you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive. Does our church believe in this passage? He wondered. What's a missionary to say? Yes, of course. Then he posed, well, why do we work so hard and pray so little? Good question. Why do we? What if the only thing between you and a season of refreshing is prayer? I don't mean a shallow grace at a meal type prayer. I'm talking about heartfelt prayer. I can't think of a more simple or really more important way that we can partner with God in bringing about a reversal. What challenges are you facing? You know, is your job in jeopardy? Is your loved one in hospice? Is your family under attack? Or is your faith in tatters? Retreat into your prayer closet. The queen entered the throne room of Xerxes because she had spent time in the throne room of God. The same is true for your story and mine. Through prayer, we can face whatever. Not only did Xerxes invite her to enter, but he also welcomed her petition. Verse 3, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, I will give it. Esther requested a dinner date. Haman, a nice evening that included the king, Haman, and her. Just the three of them. Some chit-chat, a bottle of wine, and some Frank Sinatra songs. The quickest way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? So be it. And the evening and the dinner date was a great success. And Haman left with a full belly and a big head because life was good. He was in the king's in-house council and the queen's go-to guy for black tie affairs. And he smiled to himself as he strolled down the street, nodding at the row of subservient servants. Could life be sweeter? J. Vernon McGee echoes this thought. Haman came out from the banquet very happy that he only had been the guest of the king and queen. His ego had been greatly expanded. He had made such a hit with the queen that she invited him back the next day for another banquet. And this section illustrates that pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. British Bible scholar William Barclay wrote, pride is the ground in which all other sins grow, and the parent from which all the other sins come. And the Greeks have a proverb, and it goes something like this, whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. So Haman, leaving the feast, he saw Mordecai sitting at the gate, still wearing sackcloth and ashes, still refusing to bow to him. And Haman snarled, Goodbye, good mood. Hello, grudge. Haman went home as cheerless as a Mount Marathon marathoner with bunions. He gathered his friends and his wife, and he told them in no uncertain terms that Mordecai was raining on his parade. Verse 12, I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave, and she's invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the gate. You remember Mike Jagger? Can't get no satisfaction. His wife, Zeresh, and all his friends said to him, have a pole set up, reaching to the height of 50 cubits, and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai impaled on it. And then go to the king to the banquet and enjoy yourself. This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the pole set up. A surgical strike. That's it. Send the message loud and clear. Doom to all of the dissenters. Death to all of the disobedient. And Haman ordered the construction of gallows that were 75 feet tall. 7.5 stories tall. Persian gallows did not include a rope around the neck, but rather a stake that was thrust through the body. And Haman went to bed that night thinking about Mordecai being skewered on a stick. Not the most pleasant way to fall asleep, but Haman was not a very pleasant person. And speaking of sleep, King Xerxes couldn't. He tossed and he turned and he pounded at his pillow and he pounded it again. And he sat up on the edge of his bed and groaned and belched. And he blamed the sleeplessness on that spicy meat sauce. He'd been wiser to blame it on heaven's butterfly. Xerxes' sleep therapy? He requested a reading of the scrolls, the book of records, and the court attendant entered the chamber carrying a fat scroll, and he opened it and he began to drone on and on and on. He read the minutes from the last council meeting. 6 gates were ordered for Susa. The king approved new helmets for the army. Mordecai saved the king's life by reporting an assassination attempt. Wait, what? King Xerxes sat straight up in bed and told the reader, stop right there. I'm sure you will recall that moment from earlier in the story. Mordecai heard two insurgents plotting to kill the king, and he reported the scheme to Esther. And the queen reported it to Xerxes, and the king survived. And the matter was recorded in the books, and nothing was done for Mordecai until now. Verse 3. What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this? The king asked. And when the king learned that nothing had been done for Mordecai, who had saved his life, he became apoplectic. How could this be? Mordecai, who had protected the crown and received not so much as a gold watch. And Xerxes climbed out of bed and began to pace. Something needed to be done, but what? And Xerxes needed some advice. Chapter 6, and the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about impaling Mordecai on the pole that he had set up for him. His attendants answered, Haman is standing in the court. Bring him in, the king ordered. It was the crack of dawn. Both men were in the royal palace with Mordecai on their minds. Xerxes wanted to order and honor him. Haman wanted to gore him. And the king called for Haman. Max continues, Haman fluffed his peacock feathers and strutted into the king's quarters. And before he could say top of the morning, Xerxes asked him a question. What should be done for the man the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought to himself, who is there that the king would rather honor than me? Narcissist that Haman was, he assumed that the king was giving him some prompts and being coy about it. And after all, who was more worthy of royal recognition? So he puffed on his fingernails and brushed them against his chest. He envisioned the day unfolding for him. He'd ride abroad and astride the steed of the king, wearing a royal robe. People would pave his path with rose petals, and as he passed, he'd blow them kisses and they'd reciprocate. Oh, it would be a grand day. Verse 7. So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. And then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man that the king delights to honor. Great idea, said Xerxes the king. Of course it is, thought Haman the egomaniac. What happened next? It's just one of the great moments in the Bible. Go at once, the king commanded Haman. Get the robe and the horse and do as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything that you have recommended. Could it get any better? Within moments, it was Mordecai Day in Susa, complete with a marching band. And behold, the first of several reverses of fortune in this story. Haman intended to put Mordecai on a spike. Instead, Haman placed him on a horse. Haman planned to lead Mordecai to the gallows to the sound of jeers. Instead, he paraded him down the street to the sound of cheers. Haman wanted the king to throw him a parade, and now he wanted to simply throw up. Some rabbinic sources say that Haman had to take on the role of Mordecai's personal servant, and as such, was responsible for lowering himself so that Mordecai could step on his neck in order to mount the horse. How do you say poetic justice in Persian? After the celebration, verse 12, Haman hurried home, mourning, his head covered. And Haman informed Zeresh, his wife, and all the friends of everything that had happened to him. Who saw this coming? Who could have envisioned such a hairspin U-turn? The answer, God could. God orchestrated all of the events, all the details. The sleepless king, the detailed, boring reading, the entry about Mordecai in the book, the entrance of Haman into the castle court. Who could do this but the blessed controller of all things? Ephesians 1:11, God makes everything work out according to his plan. Even in the most pagan corner of the world, even in the heart of a hedonist king, even in the interplay between two men who had decreed the death of thousands of Jews, God was at work. And he is still at work. Sometimes we think the odds are against us, and we've been led to believe that life is a roll of the dice, and you can't remember the last time they rolled in your favor. Does it seem your good deeds go unnoticed, your integrity unrewarded? If so, just ponder the plight of Haman, the outcome of Mordecai. God flip-flopped their stories. Haman began the day large and in charge, walking into the king's quarters. Mordecai began the day wearing sackcloth and ashes, praying in the shadow of a 7-story gallows that had his name on it. Yet from one moment to the next, Haman was humiliated and Mordecai was given the keys to the city. Haman's death edict became silly putty in the hands of God's providence. Next time you hear somebody say, "The devil's in the details," correct them. God is in the details. He works in the small moments. Ron Meal has a great book called "He Works the Night Shift." The insignificant becomes significant because he's orchestrating the day-to-day details of innumerable lives through millennia of time to do whatever he has foreordained to do. Just one example. There's a mother who can attest to this. Max writes, "Out of respect for her privacy, I won't disclose her name, but I will tell you her story. She decided to end her life. The twists and turns had taken their toll, and she was simply out of cope. She planned her exit down to the last detail. One of those details was a trip to the local bookstore to purchase a children's book for her kids, and that would be her parting gift. And she asked the store owner to make a recommendation, and he took her to a shelf that contained a book called Tell Me the Story. It's by Max Licato. The mother made the purchase, and I know what happened next because she wrote me a letter on the back of the bookstore sack. This is just a short note to say thank you for your wonderful book, Tell Me the Story. I went to the bookstore today to purchase gifts for several people, and for several weeks I had been playing with the idea of killing myself. I've been struggling for years to really believe and feel that God is real. I bought this as a goodbye present for one of my children. I had no idea what the book said, but it was supposedly Christian and had a pretty cover. So for the next several hours, I drove around crying. I was waiting until my children would be asleep so that I could go home and leave their presence and disappear forever. But God led me on a little detour, though. My car ran out of oil and the engine started making this clicking sound. I tried to find an open express oil or something, but everything was closed, and I was so frustrated because I needed my car to stay in one piece long enough for me to go home and then go back to some nearby railroad tracks. I pulled into a nearby parking lot, and I was sorting through the presents and writing a little note of encouragement on each, and for some reason I decided to waste time by reading Tell Me the Story. I was really touched. I felt as if I was really able to know Jesus in a different way. So instead of killing myself tonight, I'm going to go home and keep rereading the book. I want a relationship with God. I'm going to turn my car around, mail this letter, and go home and read the story to my kids. A king can't sleep. A despondent mother buys a book. God is at work. Move forward, for God is working in your life. He is. Don't listen to voices of doubt or fear. Don't cower to the struggle. You can't see God's hand or make sense of his ways. That's okay. Obey what you know to do. Be patient for what you don't. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Press on. When the world seems off the rails, hold fast to this truth. Butterfly wings don't determine the course of history. God does. He did it in the days of Esther. He still does it today. Selah.